Today is Thursday, April 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump praises some states that are beginning to reopen while disagreeing with others doing it too soon.
We don't want rebounds after all this death that we've suffered. Not work. I don't view work. I view it death.
On the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, the pandemic has led to cleaner air and water. But will it last? Also ahead, top hip-hop stars stage a live stream concert to support New York healthcare workers. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. coronavirus deaths topped 47,000 Wednesday after rising by a near record single day from a day before. President Donald Trump on Wednesday applauded steps by a handful of Republican-led U.S. states to reopen their economies, but later during his daily briefing said that he told Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, a longtime supporter, that he disagreed with his plan to reopen certain businesses this month, saying it's too soon for spas, beauty salons, and tattoo parlors to reopen.
I told the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, that I disagree strongly with his decision to open certain facilities which are in violation of the phase one guidelines.
Georgia has been struggling to increase testing for new coronavirus infections and to boost tracking of those in contact with infected people. Experts say without them, there is a huge risk of a quick rebound in illness. Georgia has ranked in the bottom 10 per capita in testing. About a half dozen U.S. states, mostly in the South, are loosening stay-at-home guidelines, allowing an array of non-essential businesses to reopen. President Trump earlier this week gave those states a show of support on Twitter. Despite the pain stay-at-home orders are having on Americans' lives, a new poll finds a strong majority of people favor tough coronavirus restrictions. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
An AP NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll finds that some 80% of those questioned remain in favor of the stay-at-home and social distancing restrictions in order to lessen the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Laura McCullough, a college physics professor in Wisconsin, says the virus remains a huge threat.
We're still discovering how nasty it can be. So I want to see people staying at home for even longer.
While more than 60% back the actions taken by the government in their area, a vocal 12% is demanding an end to the restrictions. Mishon Maddock with the Michigan Conservative Coalition says the restrictions have wiped out millions of jobs.
It's an economic disaster for Michigan, and people are sick and tired of it.
Tim McGuire, Washington.
While citizens are struggling with fears over feeding their families versus getting sick from the virus, state and local leaders are trying to find a balance. International Edition Steve Miller spoke to Dr. Jose Vasquez, division chief and professor of medicine for infectious diseases at Augusta University, about how the balance can be struck between easing restrictions and preventing the spread of COVID-19.
That's a good question. So I think there are several issues. Number one is I think we definitely would like to see the curve flattening, not only in new cases, but also in deaths. The reason that's important is the main reason we went into lockdown was to prevent this gigantic surge into hospitals across the world, right? And that appears to be happening in, I think, just about every hospital across the United States and across most parts of Europe and across most parts of the world. Now that we've been able to do that and bring down the surge and not overload the hospitals, we have to figure out what to do to get to some kind of normality, if you will, with these lockdowns. And I think that's the next step. I think a lot of people forget that was the reason we went into the lockdown, besides the fact that we wanted to, protect ourselves and protect the spread. But it really was to make sure that we didn't overwhelm the healthcare system anywhere.
So, I mean, to follow up on that, so speaking about not wanting to overwhelm the healthcare systems,
yeah.
How quickly should you roll back the restrictions so that you don't have a resurgence of the coronavirus infections, or for that matter, any contagion?
Depends on the contagion, so we'll go with coronavirus, because obviously Ebola would be very different, right? But, you know, that's probably the question that everybody across the world is looking for. I don't have the answer to that, except to say that I think now the public across the world is much better educated as far as transmission of an infectious disease agent. I think the population across the world doesn't want to get sick. They don't want to die. And I think we're a lot smarter than what most governments give us credit for, if you will. But I think now that we are into it a couple of months, we know what we need to do.
This certainly will not be the last pandemic that the world faces. So if you take a look at what we have learned in the, let's say, 5-6 months since COVID-19 first came to the stage, where do we stand in terms of learning some lessons to better prepare us for the next time?
You know, I thought we were prepared after the last pandemic, the H1N1, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was huge. That infected 50 to 60 million people in the United States, and it killed about 50,000 people. So I would have thought after that one we would have been better prepared, but apparently we weren't, right? I think there's a couple of things. I think we've realized that we have to move quicker. I think we have to be more nimble, flexible, if you will. And by that, I'm talking about the government, you know. And what I think one of the things that everybody's criticized, and I agree, is the testing has been poor. I think we got behind the testing, way behind the testing. That has got to change. You know, as I've said before, you know, we are in a 2020 pandemic, you know, and we're still using, you know, guidelines from the 1950s. So I think we have to improve the flexibility of our government response, not only at the federal level, but also at the local level as well. And I just don't think we move fast enough to this. I think once we start to increase our testing, I think we're going to see that the case fatality rates to this coronavirus is probably what it is to influenza. However, we're not going to be there if we can't do some massive testing.
France's parliament votes next week on plans to use a controversial tracing app to help fight the coronavirus as the country eyes easing its own lockdown next month. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports that, like elsewhere in Europe, such apps have sparked privacy concerns.
French Digital Affairs Minister Cédric O says the downloadable app would notify smartphone users when they cross people with COVID-19, with that information helping authorities to reduce the spread of the pandemic.
L'application Stop COVID sera pleinement respectueuse de mes libertés.
In a video on the ruling party's La République En Marche's Facebook page, O says the so-called Stop COVID app will fully respect people's liberties. He says it will be completely voluntary and anonymous, and he says it will be temporary, lasting only so long as the pandemic. The government wants to launch the app on May 11th, the date it has set to begin easing a two-month lockdown here. It initially announced a parliamentary debate on the technology, but that's been changed to a vote after a major pushback from lawmakers. The app's critics include ruling party members like Guillaume Chiche. Chiche told French TV the app would reveal people's health status and lead to discrimination and exclusion. He's not the only one worried.
We think that it is very dangerous for the government to say to French people that the solution will be this kind of application.
Benoît Piedaloux is a member of La Quadrature du Net, an advocacy group defending digital rights and freedoms. He lists a raft of potential problems, from chances the app could infringe on individual liberties to whether it can actually work effectively.
We think that a digital application is not the correct answer to this problem. The government should buy masks. The government should open new hospitals. There is a lot of other solutions than an application.
A recent poll showed 8 in 10 French respondents said they would be willing to download the app. But Pierre Dalloux believes the numbers of those actually using it will likely be a lot smaller. And many seniors, who are among the most vulnerable to coronavirus, don't have smartphones. France isn't the only European country working on tracing apps and sparking similar rights debates, including in neighboring Germany. Reports say the French government is also pushing Apple to allow the app to work on its iPhones without built-in privacy measures. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has vowed to arrest and punish 50 people who escaped mandatory coronavirus quarantines at an isolation center in Nairobi. Some Kenyans who were forced to isolate in government facilities have complained about high fees to stay at the center. Mohamed Youssef reports.
Kenya's health minister, Mutahi Kagwe, called on the public to report individuals who escaped from the Kenya Medical Training College, one of the government quarantine centers in Nairobi.
An individual who you are aware, because there were even videos, who you are aware jumped the fence at KMTC, jumped the wall at KMTC, and is now with you. That individual is going to cost you very, very highly. That individual could end up killing your child. It is therefore imperative and important that you call the police.
Last week, some people in the quarantine center in Mandera County bribed their way out of the facility. Godfrey Otieno spent 16 days at the KMTC quarantine facility. The father of four says the government quarantine center had its challenges, and he understands why people would want to escape.
So these people don't understand why they're in quarantine. They see it as a form of punishment. Secondly, you are likely to get more infections there than you had. Thirdly, in a government facility, there is a notion that the government should take care of you. Because if you tell somebody from Kibera to pay 2,000 shillings a day, this person earns less than 10,000 in a month. How is he going to pay for that?
Francis Luchivia finished his quarantine this week after a longer than expected stay at a hotel in Nairobi.
The original instruction was we'll be placed under forced quarantine for 14 days. On doing the test at the quarantine facility, two people tested positive. Then they used that as a reason to continue holding us there, saying that we are continuing to hold you for another 14 days.
Luchivia paid 1,700 for his quarantine and was ordered to self-isolate another 7 days at home after his release. Kenya has banned public gatherings, imposed a nighttime curfew, and forced people to wear a mask in public to stop the spread of the virus. President Uhuru Kenyatta, speaking on Wednesday, said anyone who does not follow the directives should be taken to a quarantine facility.
Nandipo tumesema, ya? Watu kama hao, watu ambao wataendelea kukosa kutii sheria.
We are saying people who do not respect the said laws and regulation, if you are caught breaking the said regulations, I say there is no need of taking that person to the police station. Police have other jobs of protecting us, he says. If they are arrested, they should be taken to the quarantine center and stay there for 11 days. They break the law again, then they should be added another 11 days. Because we need to do this to return our country to normalcy, Kenyatta says. Also, Wednesday, the government restricted the movement of people in and out of Mandera County, which borders Ethiopia and Somalia, after 8 coronavirus cases were reported there. Mandera is a 5th county where movement is restricted. The Kenya government has accused some people of not taking the virus seriously. COVID-19 has claimed the lives of nearly 180,000 people globally. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe's government has reduced the mandatory quarantine period for possible coronavirus cases by one half. The government says it lacks the resources to take care of patients in isolation for the 2-week period recommended by the World Health Organization. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare for VOA.
Health Minister Obadiah Moyo said late Tuesday that Zimbabwe does not have the resources to continue following the 2-week quarantine period for people entering the country. Speaking at a news conference streamed on social media, Moyo said the cabinet has decided to reduce the quarantine period to 7 days.
And if they are found to be positive, they will be sent to an isolation center. And if they are negative, they will be released. And it decongests the facilities.
That might be good news for returning Zimbabwean citizens who have been complaining on social media about squalid quarantine centers which reportedly do not have running water. Health experts see this as dangerous. Dr. Alex Kasasira, the head of the World Health Organization in Zimbabwe, is urging those released to self-quarantine to minimize the spread of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Zimbabwe has 29 confirmed cases. 4 people have died.
Several of the confirmed cases in Zimbabwe have been amongst people who are returning to Zimbabwe from countries which have widespread transmission of COVID-19. So it's really in the public health recommended good to have a close monitoring of anybody who is returning to Zimbabwe at this time from such countries. So this monitoring and the quarantine could be voluntary, it could be mandatory.
Zimbabwe had initially put the quarantine period at 21 days, even longer than the WHO's recommendation. Kasasira explains the importance of keeping possible coronavirus patients isolated while doctors watch them for signs of the infection.
The 14-day period is the average time between, it's what we call the incubation period, is the time between the time somebody may be infected and the time he or she develops symptoms. So if you spend more than 14 days without having any symptoms, the likelihood is that you are not likely to be infected.
The cash-strapped government says it has so far spent about $125,000 on food and basic needs of 950 returning residents in COVID-19 quarantine centers. The cost of accommodation is not included in that figure, officials said Wednesday. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Well, the pandemic's lockdown has not been good for many businesses, but one that has benefited is sales of alcoholic beverages. And while liquor and beer sales in the U.S. have gone up, smaller craft beer brewers, whose popularity had been dramatically rising in recent years, are now in danger of being tapped out. Joining us to talk more about it is reporter Chris Morris, who has been following the story. Chris, I guess even though beer and liquor sales are way up, small craft brewers are really struggling.
The craft beer industry over the last several years has sort of been exploding. You've seen a lot of growth, and as of right now, there are 8,150 craft breweries in the country. That's kind of a loose definition. It can be anything from Samuel Adams to that little small brewery around the corner from you. The majority are the smaller ones like that. And what's happening right now is the craft brewers of America are seeing a massive drop in business, and we could see thousands closing sometime within the next 6 months.
Any idea how widespread that would be?
It really depends. The Brewers Association, which is sort of the trade organization for craft brewers, put out a survey in the last week or so saying with current costs and revenues and everything with the social distancing measures that are going on, how long can you last? 2% said, I'm closing right now. 12% said no more than 4 weeks. 45%, over 45% said they can only last 3 months. Mm-hmm. Now, if it is that 45% that do shut down, that's 3,735 craft brewers throughout the country.
Wow, that's just in the U.S.
Yes, correct.
Why are they having to shut down? Is there no other way they are able to compensate in some other way?
Small craft breweries tend to make most of their money from foot traffic. People come in. They like the experience of tasting things in the tap room, and that's where they make their money. And a few distribute on kind of a local level, but not that much. Also, they make a lot of their money from draft sales to restaurants and bars. And because there are no restaurants and bars open anywhere, those sales are off. And because of social distancing, the tap rooms are closed. So they're making just a very, very small percentage of their income right now. The average craft brewery has seen its sales drop at least 65%, a lot more seeing in the 70s at this point.
Shifting a little bit here, we heard a lot about Corona beer sales slumping over the coronavirus. What are you hearing about that?
That was a fun story that some people bid on, but it actually isn't true. That survey that came out saying that people were blaming a Corona beer for coronavirus or cutting back on buying it, that came out right at the end of February or so of this year. And Bart Watson, who is the chief economist of Brewers Association, did some digging. He said he found out that sales over the past 4 weeks were up 3%, actually, and about over 3% for the year before that. So really no effect. Corona, like Budweiser and Bud Light and some of the other big national chains, they make most of their sales in stores. And like you said at the beginning, people are buying beer and wine and spirits right now because they're trapped at home. And you buy them in stores.
So Corona is not suffering.
Corona is doing just fine to this, yes.
That was in February. So where do Corona beer sales stand now?
Well, they're doing pretty good. They're still on the shelves. But it is worth noting that Grupo Modelo, which is an Anheuser-Busch subsidiary, they're the group in Mexico that makes Corona. They also make Modelo and Pacifico beers. They were deemed non-essential by the Mexican government. And so they're supposed to remain closed through the end of this month. Now, they're trying to be qualified as essential and get back to work. But there actually was a rush in Mexico for Corona beer when that order came down. But here in the U.S., there's still plenty of supplies.
Reporter Chris Morris, thank you so much for being with us. After three elections and more than a year, Israel has a new unity government in an emergency power-sharing deal reached this week between Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his rival, Benny Gantz. But as Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem, there is concern the new leadership may not be able to govern because of internal differences.
The deal came after polls showed Israelis wanted a unity government, a sentiment analysts say largely reflects public worry over the coronavirus emergency. Before the deal, former Army Chief of Staff Benny Gantz repeatedly said he would never join a government headed by Netanyahu, who was set to go on trial in three separate cases. Gantz then changed his mind. In remarks on Israel television, Gantz said it is more important to fight the coronavirus than to win in politics. He said that he chose to preserve democracy and to join Netanyahu in the emergency situation that Israel is now facing. Israel has kept most of the population home for more than a month, and by April 22nd had nearly 200 deaths with more than 14,000 confirmed cases. Speaking on the day the deal was reached, political analyst Aviv Bushinsky said Israelis clearly wanted this type of government, especially as the alternative was a fourth election.
Today, a big sign of relief was felt almost in any Israeli home, not because today it's the eve of the Holocaust Memorial Day, but because this is a big sign of ending of almost 500 days, 484 days, of a political turmoil that included three elections in 1 year.
The deal will have Netanyahu and Gantz rotating as leaders. Gantz agreed that Netanyahu will be prime minister for the first year and a half and will then give the job to him for the next year and a half. Critics are skeptical that Netanyahu will agree to leave when it is time. Political analyst Yoav Krakovsky says Netanyahu gained more from the deal than Gantz did. He says Netanyahu's Likud party comes out stronger as it has a veto over judicial appointments. The deal comes weeks before Netanyahu is scheduled to go on trial for three separate corruption charges. He has said repeatedly that he believes the justice system is prejudiced against him. Critics say they suspect Netanyahu may try to pass legislation that would cancel his trial. Adding to the chances of deadlock are the two men's divergent views on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Netanyahu wants to unilaterally annex Jewish settlements in the West Bank and is free to do it at the beginning of July. Gantz had wanted to delay this initiative and make it contingent on Jordanian approval. Until just a few months ago, the U.S. position considered Jewish settlements in the West Bank inconsistent with international law. President Trump reversed that position last year, paving the way for an Israeli annexation of at least part of the area. Palestinians say they will do everything they can to stop the Israeli annexation. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. Health officials say two people died with the new coronavirus in California weeks before the first reported death from the virus. Santa Clara County officials said the people died at home February 6th and 17th. Canadian police are facing mounting criticism for using social media and not a provincial emergency alert system to notify the public that a gunman was at large for some 13 hours after he murdered the first of his 22 victims over the weekend. It was the worst mass shooting in the country's history. President Donald Trump said Wednesday that he has instructed the U.S. Navy to fire on any Iranian ships that harass it at sea. A week after 11 vessels from Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy came dangerously close to American ships in the Gulf, close interactions with Iranian military vessels were not uncommon in 2016 and 2017. Stay with VOA for all the latest world headlines. Federal officials in the U.S. say they have now seen the first confirmed virus cases in house pets. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Two pet cats in New York State are thought to have gotten the virus from people in their households or neighborhoods. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there's no indication animals can transmit the virus to people, but it does appear some animals can get the virus from humans. The CDC recommends keeping cats inside and dogs away from dog parks. Pet owners with COVID-19 should wear masks around their animals and avoid touching them. The two New York State cats are expected to recover. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Wednesday was the 50th anniversary of the very first Earth Day. Swedish activist Greta Thunberg joined calls for a combined effort to tackle the coronavirus and the climate crisis, saying, "The 50th anniversary of Earth Day is the time to choose a new way forward." Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Meteorological Organization warns that if the planet keeps warming at its current pace, the temperatures risk increasing by 1.5 degrees Celsius in the next 10 years. WMO officials say this rise would worsen extreme weather events, and many of the dangerous impacts of climate change may become irreversible. WMO reports the national lockdowns of transportation industry and energy production due to the coronavirus pandemic have resulted in a 6% drop of greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere. However, WMO Secretary General Petteri Tala says this good news will be short-lived. He says the startup of industry might even trigger a boost in emissions. He says the pandemic also is making it more difficult to monitor and manage weather and other hazards.
This current COVID crisis has led to a decrease of some measurements. For example, airline companies are carrying out measurements since we have very few flights nowadays. We have less measurements from the aircraft, which is having negative impact on the quality of the forecast.
While the world is in the throes of tackling two big issues at the same time, Tallis says the magnitude of problems associated with climate change is much greater than that of COVID. He says health and economic problems resulting from the pandemic are devastating, but notes they only will last a few years.
If we are unable to mitigate climate change, we would see persistent health problems, especially hunger and ability to feed the growing population of the world, and there will be also more massive impact on economies.
Tala says the world needs to show the same determination and unity against climate change as against COVID-19. He says people everywhere need to act together in the interests of the health and welfare of humanity for the sake of this and future generations to come. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This year's Earth Day has prompted calls from many, including UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, for governments to pursue green recovery in response to the coronavirus. A few hours before the Pope delivered his message, he was serenaded in front of Rome's Colosseum by world-renowned musical artist Zucchero Sugar Fornaciari and Bono, who sang Canta la Vita, adapted from Bono's Let Your Love Be Known. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Wunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks so much for listening. Please take care of yourselves and be well.